Banning on 2FM.
Okay, you fix our headphones there. Now, you will have heard by now, no doubt, that the actor Leonard Nimoy has died. Sorry, this is very, well, I shouldn't be so whatever. Anyway, was he a fan? Are you a big fan? Are you, Springer?
Well,
okay, that's all. I'll ask
no,
you.
No, we're hardwired. I mean, we are. We're hardwired to love this guy and to miss him already. And what can I say? I mean, I actually was very upset when I heard. Very.
All right, well, hold on. Every single newspaper this morning, in fact, most of them have a picture of him on the front page. We're talking here about Leonard Nimoy, as in the role of Star Trek's first officer, Mr. Spock. And the news of his death brought huge sadness to thousands of Star Trek fans. Nimoy's co-star, William Shatner, he was Captain Kirk, he said, I loved him like a brother. Barack Obama says, long before being nerdy was cool, there was Leonard Nimoy. I loved Spock. A tweet from NASA simply said, so many of us at NASA were inspired by Star Trek. Boldly go. Anyway, one of the voices you can hear now in front of me is indeed Tim, or Springer, or Mr. Spring. I'll call him DJ Mr. Spring, a.k.a. Tim Hannigan. And also, I think, don't we have? We do, yeah. John, how you doing? Are you all right, John Byrne, yeah?
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed, and Springer as well. Okay, now, I was just talking there while the ad break was on. And I said, Star Trek. Yeah, I didn't really follow. And he says, yeah, well, it goes right back to the 60s. And I was just thinking, I thought it was the 80s. I know nothing about Star Trek.
Yeah, but where were you in the 60s and the 70s? I mean, look, set the tone here. You remember the 70s in Ireland, it was grim.
It was.
I can't come up with an expletive offensive enough to put before the word grim to describe Ireland in the 70s, right? But the 60s were even worse.
Yeah.
Okay, and Star Trek did actually run, and people in Ireland could watch Star Trek if they had one of those, what are they, televisions?
That's right, yeah.
It was an event to have a telly. You'd go to someone's house to watch something. Star Trek is one of the first things that young people would latch into and go, oh my God, what is this? It ran again in the 70s. Saturday morning TV was widely syndicated. So as we grew up, this stuff was upon us in massive amounts, and it burned itself into us. And this character is the one who stood out. He was the one who wasn't silly. He was the hard man. He was the clever one.
Well, look, here he is in the front of the Independent this morning. He lived long and prospered. It's the main picture on the front page. There's an obituary in the Irish Times too. Leonard Nimoy, actor who played Spock of Star Trek, dies at 83. It's not so sober in all the other papers. Spock has boldly gone, aged 83. And here's all his Vulcan sayings. Spock beams up. Seriously, in the Irish Daily, something or other, the Daily Star. He lived long and prospered. Star Trek fans in mourning as Mrs. Spock dies from lung cancer. That's from the Mirror. Boldly gone is the headline on the front page here. Captain Kirk leads tributes to Star Trek legend Spock, who dies at 83. And here's the Examiner, huge page as well. Star Trek Mrs. Spock beams up for the last time. So, John, put it into some kind of perspective for us, will you? First of all, I mean, I would never have known this, because, as I say, Star Trek completely passed me by. 1966 to 1969, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, well, actually, Spock goes back, 66, 69, there were three seasons, third season wasn't particularly good, they didn't have much money, the budget was cut, and eventually it was cancelled. But actually, Leonard Nimoy, history with it goes back even further, because they made a pilot in 65 called The Cage, and it had a different captain, it had a different crew, and NBC said, no, it's too slow, it's too cerebral, it's too intellectual, so they said, no, we're not going to have it. But then, they saw potential in it, and they said, let's pay for a second pilot, and the only character that survived that pilot to make it to the show proper was Spock. So he was there from the very beginning. I mean, he was the only character carried over, and I think that's important, and he actually even spoke the first ever words, if you want to get nerdy, but the first ever words heard in the history of Star Trek were spoken by Leonard Nimoy. You know, they weren't that interesting. They were like, check the circuits or something like that. But, and the early version of Spock in that pilot wasn't the finished article that it went on to be, but he was there from the very start, and he was central from the very start, and he was the most popular character. Now, that might, that might have stuck in the craw of William Shatner, I'm sure it did, and his ego, but for kids especially, and for fans, Spock from the word go was the most popular character.
Okay, what about you then, Springer? I mean, like, just in terms of, like, you know, being a child, having that box in the corner of the room, which is called a television, you're quite right there. What did it do to you?
But it was escapism, it was another world and so on, but the colour thing, because most of us really saw it in black and white in the evenings, and we would watch it with our families, with our dads. Okay, so that's there, and that's a personal thing, and that's when you're very young, that sticks with us. But later, on our own, on a Saturday morning in your own time, and even there was an animated one directly aimed at kids, but this science fiction thing, which seemed so cool and together, became a bit camp and silly, and was then rebroadcast for kids in the mornings, and you're there on your own. It was in colour. Again, it's reinserted in, and that's why. But look, Spock, Leonard Nimoy, he did so much. He did a lot of TV, did umpteen bad movies before he got the role doing this. He continued to play Spock throughout his career. He kept turning up in things as Spock, and you'd be thinking, well, he's playing a doctor in Columbo, but that's Spock. No, it is. And also, in my tiny child head at the time, I was thinking, this is an episode of Star Trek. And he's gone through that gate thing, and he's back in time, and he's on his own, and he's trying to... And he's, of course, he's playing a scientist in Columbo. He was Spock.
Well, then, was he happy to be typecast, do you think?
Well, what was his book called? John, you read his book. I didn't read the book, did I? What do you think of the book thing? What was the title of it again?
Well, the first book was called I'm Not Spock.
There you go.
In 75, right? Now, that kind of, and that kind of pissed off a lot of fans. No, but in fairness, it's kind of misleading. I think he was just kind of, you know, saying, well, it's not me, and this is who I am. But he wasn't trying to sort of rubbish the role, or he wasn't trying to say he didn't like the role. He always loved the role. And, I mean, then later on, I think about 20 years later, he published another book called I Am Spock, or whatever. Yeah. So he did, you know, it's not that he kind of came to kind of, in later years, to really embrace the role. I think he did, but I think he did from the word go. I don't think he ever really kind of distanced himself from it, or tried to say, you know, I'm not this thing. I don't want to be part of this whole geeky, nerdy thing. So maybe William Shatner had a bit of a more uneasy relationship with being Kirk. But I think Spock, no. Even though the book was called I'm Not Spock, I think it was slightly misleading.
Okay, here, I'm going to give you this here. This is a Spock salute. Are you ready?
Live long and prosper. Image of Sirach. Father of all we now hold true.
Meant so much to his brother. Look, he's crying.
I can't. Who was Sirach again? Oh, here we go. That was his dad, wasn't it?
Wait, hold on a second.
His cousin,
John. I mean, like, well, you weren't young enough to know it first time around, or were you? John, hello?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Sorry, excuse me. Yeah, yeah. I know I wasn't, but I mean, you know, I guess when I was a kid, I'd say, you know, two kind of TV characters really sort of stood out for me were, and this probably tells you a lot about RTE at recycling kind of American shows, classic American shows back when I was a kid, were like Phil Silvers as Bilko and Spock. Those two characters, both kind of outsiders, and I think that was the genius of the Spock character and why it appealed to kids as well. I mean, he was, okay, first of all, he was half human, half Vulcan, right? But he was neither one thing nor the other. Now, as an actor, I mean, that's a complete gift. I mean, you know, I think of people like Elvis Presley in Flaming Star, his best ever role. He was half Native American, half white Texan rancher. And it's like there's so much to play with for an actor there. You're kind of straddling two words. You're neither this or that. You're torn this way and that. And I think that's something Leonard Nimoy kind of grasped immediately, you know, that it would have been easy for Spock to be kind of robotic and stiff and distant and cold. But he really injected a warmth into it and kind of a sarcastic humor, kind of wry humor into it, you know, lifting those famous eyebrows kind of sarcastically. And, you know, he was like the perfect foil for McCoy, Bones McCoy, on the one hand you had, who was like the kind of explosively emotional, complete contrast. And then he was the perfect foil for Kirk, you know, who was this all action, all testosterone, all womanizing character. So he was a great straight man. But I think, again, you know, why it appealed to kids and why it appealed to me was, he was that outsider character. You know, he was the only alien on the ship. He was this kind of enigmatic loner. He was different. And he was frequently bullied as well by the other characters. I mean, a lot of the episodes end with everybody, like, just basically taking the piss out of him laughing at him.
Yeah,
you know, freeze frame. They're all laughing. And again, I think that's something kids could really relate to, you know?
Yeah, well, he was, in a way, he was the underdog, but he was the original nerd. And I think the whole series itself is in fact a nerd, because it was an underdog, it was bullied off the air, and then there was this groundswell of kids and normal people who insisted it come back, and it, because of this love from everybody outside it and the public, oh come on, rerun it, and you know, we're going to have to strike a load of new prints because they've worn out in syndication, and this must have some legs. And when Fox were murdering everyone with science fiction in the middle of the 70s with Star Wars and Alien and so on, Paramount and NBC revived Star Trek, and they pumped more money into the first Star Trek movie than anyone had ever pumped into anything ever on the screen. Even just the sound design alone cost more than the budget for Star Wars. It was an incredible roll of the dice that failed hard. It really was. It's a fantastic failure.
But when we were talking here about Star Trek being 66 to 69, were there more Star Treks on TV? Were there loads made in the 70s and 80s or not?
No, they revived it for kids' TV specifically with a cartoon version. And there was
then it was just the movies.
Well, yeah, but the cartoon version was definitely aimed at kiddies, but there was a lot of politics behind that as well.
The one interesting thing about the cartoon series, and this is something that kind of points to why he was popular with all of his colleagues. I think, you know, like, on the one hand, you have William Shatner, the ego, the huge ego, who had a lot of problems with the rest of the cast. And then you had Spock kind of in the middle, who kept, you know, good relations with everybody. And part of that was because when they were making that animated series in the early 70s, or mid-70s, the people who were making it, Filmation, they were called, they were notoriously cheap. They had a very cheap style of animation. And they only wanted to use the voice talents of Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, who played Bones, James Doohan, who was Scotty, and Majel Barrett, who played Nurse Chapel, lots of other roles. But Leonard Nimoy basically refused to participate unless some of the other original cast members included. And that was because he knew they were all struggling badly as actors.
Yeah, doing science fiction, it really was the kiss of death if you're an actor. You do sci-fi, no one takes you seriously. So it was they couldn't get arrested. He was, yeah.
Okay, when you walked into the studio here, Springer, just a few minutes ago, you gave me the Vulcan sign, which is on the cover of a lot of the papers.
Yeah, you got to do the thing.
The thing, yeah, okay.
But you can't try and do it and not do it properly and then pull in your little finger. That's a fail.
That sounds like your metal band, AC/DC one or anything.
It's very similar, yeah. Well,
like, that's one on either side. That's the little finger and the thumb, right?
Yeah, but again, you know, you must do the two sets of two fingers at the same time. You can't just, oh, sorry, I'll just tuck in my little finger there.
Okay, yeah. Well, hold on. Do you want to know about the origin of the Vulcan salute? Just say yes.
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, here we go. Let's take a listen. Hold on.
They were doing like that kind of wailing. And all discordant, not together, not in unison. And then the leader would shout out, Yavarechecho! And the rest of them would respond, Yavarechecho, Noiv Yisparecho! Was chilling. Whoa, something major is happening here. So I peeked, and I saw them with their hands stuck out from beneath their telly like this towards the congregation. I thought,
yeah.
Wow.
Now, you see, he was actually sitting in his local synagogue as a kid. These men got up and they started chanting. His father told him to bow his head, not to look. The chanting was so odd and interesting, he kind of had a look up and took a peek, etc. And then when he was asked to do this thing on TV, he told the director, you know, it'd be good to have some Vulcan cultural touches, and he just came up with this thing here. Yeah. And that was it there. By the way, the Wexler Oral History Project at the Yiddish Book Centre gave us that.
All
there,
right.
So thank you very much for that. Now, let's go back to this. Slash fiction. I'll throw that out. What's slash fiction? Either of you?
Well, now, again, during the 70s, like, there wasn't a lot of Trek around, right? The animated series, there was no new Star Trek on TV. There was obviously the syndicated reruns. But there were a lot of, like, fanzines or fan publications. And again, like we were saying, I think it was the first show that really was driven by fans and owned by fans and kind of possessed by fans. And one of the most interesting offshoots of that fan culture was this thing called Slash Fiction, now, which is huge now. It's everywhere. It's all over the internet. But basically, it was this kind of erotic fiction produced largely by women, almost exclusively by women, which is interesting. These amateur writers that kind of had, you know, paired same-sex couples together. And the first really significant couple that, you know, people worked on was Kirk and Spock. And I think that really just goes to show how much that friendship or relationship or whatever you want to call it meant to fans of the show. And I don't think it was too much of a stretch either to imagine them in a kind of erotic or romantic relationship either, because, and I don't think William Shatner was that comfortable with it now, in particular with the whole phenomenon.
So,
I think it's a credit to him and Nimoy, like, and their, you know, their chemistry. They had a fantastic chemistry, and that chemistry obviously appealed to people in certain ways, appealed to people in other ways, but that relationship was really important to people, and people obviously saw hidden depths and layers to it.
Would you be interested in going to a Star Trek kind of convention?
Going to a con?
Yeah.
I'd love to go to a con, but they all happen in the States, and you see people online talking about them, and have done for, you know, since pre-internet, since FidoNet days. You know, there's been, oh, we're going to a con, and you hear all about it, and it's, it, I prefer actually not to go, because then I get to look at the photos and listen to the stories, and then I imagine it's the perfect con. Because if I went, I'm sure I'd probably spend far too much money on crap.
And is there stuff in those 66 to 69 programs that you can look at and say something about today in terms of, well, they got that right, or they know what they were talking about there?
Well, maybe, but when you first saw it, it's fascinating because you're a child. Then you see it a little and you understand it a little bit better. And then, you know, my dad would laugh at it while I'd be fascinated. Now when I got to his age, when he was laughing at it, then I laughed at it. And, you know, there were a lot of things put into it. It wasn't just, you know, quick, you know, put some makeup on there and you get in that suit and we'll just, like, shake the background a bit. There was some thought into it. It wasn't crap. Okay, the last couple of episodes were
I think there was some really interesting sci-fi ideas in there, you know, and I think it was... It was, I mean, like I said, NBC originally thought it was too cerebral, right? And I think that, that kind of carried over, though. It wasn't dumb, you know. It was campy. It was campy, definitely, at times.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if you compare it to the films, the remakes that are out now, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, those are much more action movies, right? They're it's action-driven. The first one was all right. The second one I thought was bloody awful. You had Spock punching somebody in the face for like 25 minutes.
Yeah, but was the TV program character-driven or just cheap?
No, it was character driven out of necessity, probably because of the budget wasn't that bad for the first two seasons, but it was strongly character driven. There was a lot of really good writers working on it, a lot of really good contemporary science fiction writers working on it. So it wasn't. I mean, there was quality there. You know, there was good people working on it. There was good actors working on it, and it wasn't dumb. It was intelligent and talked down to its fans. And even the animated series was pretty kind of intelligent by the standards of Saturday morning TV. So I think that's something I miss from the new movies now, to be honest. I feel they're just like action movies. They're fun action movies, maybe, but that's all they are.
And I mean, it's a continuation of them trying to spin off nonsense from that. We had all the toys, all the dinky toys, and we had the plastic models you could assemble. And these were happening when it wasn't being pumped, right? This was after cartoon, before the big movie, and there was a lot of merchandise appearing, and the cons coming up, and cards, like baseball cards and comics and all this. So they were still milking it, and I think the new movies are all part of that. It's like, well, what can we do? And, you know, what have we got? We've got this, and it's pretty much written for you. We have the characters, we have the situation. Let's just make it a little, you know, let's do it with this technology now.
Well, then hold on a second, Springer. I mean, we have the internet over the last 20 years now, where it's like it's the revenge of the nerds, and nerds can be cool now. Yes. Were you just a nerd years ago, and now it's like it's good to kind of get out of your shell? Is that, and this helped?
Some people choose that. Some people decide they like this, and I'm going to get into this. We had no choice. We were offered one science fiction series, and we chose it.
Yeah.
And that's the way it happened. There's an irony in how Spock left. Well, I'm referring to him as Spock. Okay, he left Star Trek and then went straight into Mission Impossible, and he filled the role that Martin Landau left, because him and his wife went from Mission Impossible to do Space 1999, which was supposed to be a less camp version of Star Trek, and it was really difficult to get into. But by the end of that series, it had gone like Star Trek, and it was men in rubber suits and shaking scenery.
And have you watched all those kind of spacey kind of science fiction-y television series? And
you had to.
Some better than others. This was the start of so much of it.
You got to remember what was on offer in the 70s and the 80s, the early 80s. There wasn't anything. Science fiction was where it was at, and even if it was a rotten rerun, it was still far more interesting than anything. Poldark, for God's sake. And when the boat comes in, I mean, kill me now. Star Trek, yeah, anything. Even a rotten print of it. And you can still find the old prints, the old versions, all covered in damage because they were on celluloid. And the animation sequences in them and the composition sequences are old school. The DVDs and the stuff we see on CBS TV and so on now and on your Skybox, they've all been touched up and they're all full of CGI and weird effects that weren't there and stuff. I hate that. That ruins it for me, because it's blatantly obvious someone has touched this up, and it ruins the originality of it.
Okay, well, you know him as Spock, and just Spock. Let's just take a look then finally at Leonard Nimoy. John, what else to come in terms of his post-Trek career, if I can call it that? What's he done?
Well, he directed. I mean, he directed two Star Trek movies, still connected with Star Trek, obviously, and he appeared in Star Trek The Next Generation. But, I mean, he Three Men and a Baby, I mean, that was an enormous hit, it was a huge, I mean, he directed that enormously successfully. Even though his directorial career didn't really kind of flourish after that. I mean, he didn't seem that interested in it. I mean, he said himself, it was something he kind of stumbled into by accident. We've mentioned a couple of the roles he was in. He was in Columbo, he was in Mission Impossible. He was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, actually, the remake.
Brilliant.
Phil Kaufman's remake, and he was fantastic.
Yeah, and he played Spock in that. He played Spock in that as well.
Spock in that, he was, okay. He was a doctor. He was a cerebral doctor, again. His music career, we haven't mentioned his music career, my God. I mean, he had some albums in the late 60s, early 70s that are pretty phenomenal. The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins is one, probably the most famous track that people know. It's probably not as famous as Shatner's kind of musical career.
No, I remember years ago playing a thing of of Leonard Nimoy. He did a version of If I Had a Hammer. It's just bizarre. It's just so bad. In fact, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little bit of a musically now before we wrap it up. Hold on a second, listen.
Fuck. From far beyond the galaxies, I've journeyed to this place to study the behavior patterns of the human race. And I find them highly illogical. Irrevocable. Highly illogical.
He said illogical at the end of
that's
that
the title of it, Highly Illogical. Oh, that is, dude. The great Dr. Spock
that
or whatever.
That was so groovy.
I've never understood the female capacity to avoid a direct answer to any question. That's one of his many quotes in the papers this morning. That's the Spock thing. Of course, you remember all the jokes as well. Like, you know, the if I point to here and here and here, how many ears did Dr. Spock have? The left ear, the right ear, and the final frontier? Okay, oh. Forget it. All right, now, sorry, John. Okay, by the way, 51552 is the text. We're just Spocking here, and I'm the only one who really doesn't know enough about it. There was a Star Trek or Doctor Who. Oh, sorry, yeah, there was Star Trek or Doctor Who in the 60s. I went with Doctor Who, says that one there.
Yeah, well, you kind of would. And that if you went with what was presented to you, because, you know, you were given how many sci-fi series and you chose them.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, there's one here. Well, I would have thought you would have gone for them all since you were kind of nerdy sci-fi.
Doctor Who was kind of, it was just, even when I was six, I knew it was a little bit grotty.
Here's one here that says, yeah. Do you remember the episode of Columbo where Nimoy played the murderer surgeon? Is that the one you were talking about, Jazz?
Yeah, Prescription for Murder. Yeah.
Really? Prescription for Murder.
I think it was called.
Fantastic.
He's brilliant. I mean, right. But they, see, that was NBC again giving him a bit of work, because they gave him they kept him on for Mission Impossible immediate role because they needed him, but they gave him the Columbo thing. I think he ghost directed or helped out. Falk gave him some work later on, but even when there was no work for him, they would acknowledge his existence, like Lorne Michaels and Saturday Night Live and so on did that thing when you got John Belushi playing Captain Kirk, and I think the other guy, the tall guy playing, you know, they kept that thing alive. They kept the thing going, and they kept saying, you know, this is great.
Because, like, it meant so much to so many people when they were back there in short pants. Bit like a Frank Zappa outtake, that one there, the one I played. Yeah, it is a bit like a Frank Zappa, actually. In fact, he sounds like Barack Obama.
I think he might be.
You think he might be Barack Obama? Yeah. Is that really where we're going with
Frank
this?
Frank Zappa outtake, like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or listen to this voice. Doesn't that sound a bit like Barack Obama?
I think it is.
From far beyond the galaxy. Yeah. I've journeyed to this place.
It also sounds a bit like Frank Zappa.
We've established that Spock is, in fact, Leonard Nimoy. So Spock played Leonard Nimoy because he got stuck here in some sort of time transfer thing. Time travel is possible. You've got
to
accept that. And he's also Barack Obama. This is excellent. This is great.
Okay, I'm going to give you one more, by the way. We're not finished, right? Okay, hold on. I'll get rid of that. Are you ready for this? This will be Leonard Nimoy, and we're talking Simpsons.
Hello, I'm Leonard Nimoy. The following tale of alien encounters is true. And by true, I mean false. It's all lies, but they're entertaining lies. And in the end, isn't that the real truth? The answer is no.
All right, well, listen, John, thank you very much for talking to us. John Byrne, as in Star Trek fan, and also Mr. Spring.
I've 10 movies on DVD at home. I've been struggling with this since last night. Which one do we watch first?
Well,
which
John?
Which of the Star Trek movies?
Yeah, which one do we watch first?
Maybe I just for sentimentality, Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home.
Go with 4 first. Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Which is Star Trek 4, which he directed, and which probably is kind of the warmest and the goofiest and the funnest. So that's what I call it.
By the way, the animated series, Springer, was it any good?
It was, as John said, it was cheap, so the background cycle, the shadows, hairs, you can see the occasional thumb. So yeah, it's awesome. If you like 70s grot, it's better than the Harlem Globetrotters cartoons, put it that way.
Right, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Okay, yeah. I'm with you now. John Byrne, Mr. Spring, thank you very much indeed. And what do I say? R.I.P. Leonard Nimoy. No, he's still alive. It's Mr. Spock.
Exactly. It's all a trick of time.
All a trick, yeah. Good man, Barack.